I'm glad you're joining me for another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word. Why don't we open our Bibles to 2 Samuel chapter number 8, and keep in mind that we have a parallel now from over in 1 Chronicles chapter number 18. This is the story of David's military victories after he had taken over the city of Jerusalem and made it the new capital of the United Israeli nation. It would appear that David wants to reach the extremities of the promised land way back in the time of Abraham. And so he first pushes down to the coast where the Philistines are. 2 Samuel 8, 1. After this, David defeated the Philistines. So the Philistines are a group of five cities. They're actually five city-states. The Philistines were not Canaanites. They are actually related to the Greek peoples over in the middle part of the Mediterranean, but they have migrated this way many centuries before. And so now David goes in and defeats those city-states and subdues them, basically tells them, you have to pay tribute to the Israelis in order to live inside Israeli territory, because this is the promised land. David took Metheg Ammah out of the hand of the Philistines. And when you read the parallel in 1 Chronicles 18, that's apparently another name for the city of Gath. So this is probably where he starts the takeover of the Philistine territory, at Gath, because it's closest to the Valley of Elah, where he defeated Goliath as the champion of the Philistines. And remember the deal that day. The losing group has to become the tributaries, the slaves of the winning group. So David is just making these guys keep their promise as he moves into their territory and becomes their king. Verse number 2 in 2 Samuel. He defeated Moab. Now Moab is to the south, to the east side of the Dead Sea. And it belongs to the descendants of Lot, a relative of Abraham. So the Moabites are by long distance relatives of the Israelis. And when they first came through the region east of the Dead Sea, they were told that the Moabites' land was off limits. Well, now something changes so that Moab also becomes tributary to the Israelis. Now, what was that? Well, I think we have some evidence that the Moabites actually attacked the Israelis. And the reason I believe that is because of what David does in response to the Moabites. It says in verse 2, he defeated Moab and he measured them with a line. This is talking about the fighters from the Moabites, the warriors, the soldiers who have come against Israel without there being a reason to do so. And he made them lie down on the ground. Two lines he measured to be put to death, and one full line to be spared. Now that's the sort of thing you only do as a reprisal for some sort of war crime, so that two-thirds of the offending soldiers are executed, one-third is spared. So even though we're not told the details here, there's every indication that when David became king, shortly thereafter coming to Jerusalem, the Moabites decided to take military action against them, perhaps a sneak attack, and this was David's response. Now, as for the rest of the Moabites, not the soldiers, the Moabites became servants to David and brought tribute. So that was the arrangement that they came to after these reprisals that David took. They become tributary, and we'll discover later that it was an awful lot of wool and meat and perhaps other animal products that came out of Moab to the Israelis. And this will go back and forth a few times during Israeli history, and we'll cite the beginning of this tributary relationship when we come to those passages. Verse number 3. David also defeated Hadad-Ezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah. Now, we can't pin down exactly where Zobah's at, but it seems to be south of Hamath, which we know where that's at. It's on the way north out of Israel toward that bend in the Euphrates River. And so Zobah seems to be south of Hamath and apparently north and west from Damascus. And so David, in his intention, that's kind of in between the lines here, to take control of the Promised Land, he moves into that Baca Valley that stretches between northern Israel, we'll say the city of Dan as a good reference point, all the way up to that area of Hamath, and then beyond there, up to the bend in the Euphrates River. That territory is listed in the Promised Land citation for Abraham. So David pushes northward out of Israeli territory at this point into the kingdom of Zobah. But he times his attack so that he is there when Hadad-Ezer is actually north of Hamath trying to extend his own control. He's actually been trying to take over the kingdom of Hamath and force them to pay him tribute. We are told here that this Hadad-Ezer had gone to restore his power at the river Euphrates. So Hadad-Ezer was on his own military push northward to take possession all the way up to the bend of the river Euphrates. Well, David comes into Zobah and defeats the home force of Zobah. He took from him 1,700 horsemen. The First Chronicles 18:4 has a different accounting of personnel and numbers here. And this is one of the places I remind you that while we are confident that this is inspired by the Holy Spirit, we have to also acknowledge that it is passed down by handwritten copies through time. And one of the hardest things to hand copy are proper nouns and numbers. And so it would appear that there's some scribal differences between 2 Samuel 8 and 1 Chronicles 18. The 1 Chronicles 18 passage says that David took from Hadadezer 1,000 chariots and then 7,000 horsemen. And so it seems as if those two numbers are kind of jammed together over in the 2 Samuel 8 passage. And so I believe at this point that the Chronicles passage probably has the original numbers. 1,000 chariots, 7,000 attendant horsemen with those chariots, and then both passages agree that it's 20,000 or 22,000 men, foot soldiers. And so sometimes 20,000 is used as a rounding for 22,000. So that's a lot of soldiers, a lot of chariots, a lot of horsemen. And so David takes them down, and then he doesn't keep all the equipment. The 1 Chronicles 18:4 passage goes on to say that David hamstrung all the chariot horses because the Mosaic law warned the future king of Israel that he should not multiply to himself horses and chariots. So he should not be trying to make wheeled and hooved combat forces his power base. And so David turns the majority of these chariot horses, and apparently the horses being ridden by the horse soldiers, he turns them into farm animals by cutting the Achilles tendon just above the back of the hoof on at least one leg. You make it impossible for the animal to run. It heals up, and it can pull weight and carry loads and things, but it can't run, so it's worthless for military. And so that's what David does. However, we are told that he left enough horses for 100 chariots, probably 200 horses on 100 chariots. Now, that is a technical violation of what the Mosaic law told him to do. And it does seem to be tied in with what Solomon does later by expanding his own horse and chariot forces. Just kind of keep that in the back of your mind, that we have some fudging with the directives from God through Moses. Israeli kings shouldn't have hoofed and wheeled forces, just foot soldiers. Verse number 5, since we're in the 1 Chronicles 18 passage, says, "When the Syrians of Damascus came to help Hadadezer, king of Zobah," so there was a treaty probably between these two groups because they were neighbors. They were close to one another. That's why I think Zobah is to the south of Hamat and to the northeast from Damascus. So the Damascans come out to try to assist their ally, protect them from David. But David turns around and struck down 22,000 men of the Syrians. And so that's the match number from over in 2 Samuel chapter number 2. And then he does the follow-up to what happens when you defeat an army, a kingdom that has attacked you. You make them tributary. And so even though Damascus was not part of the original promised land allotment, it does come under David's control. It says David put garrisons in Syria of Damascus, and the Syrians became servants to David and brought tribute. And he who is gave victory to David wherever he went. So David is pushing northward, like I said, into the Promised Land area that has never been controlled by Israel up to this point. And along the way, he's also accumulating some secondary places of tribute because they've attacked Israel. And so this is a mechanism of control. Verse number, well, you know what, we're in Chronicles, so let's just continue there. 1 Chronicles 18:7. David took the shields of gold that were carried by the servants of Hadadezer and brought them to Jerusalem. So part of the plunder, part of the booty, part of the war reparations was the capture of these golden shields that belonged to Hadadezer, the king of Zobah. And he's going to put them on display in his new capital city of Jerusalem. Verse 8, from Tibhat and from Kun, cities of Hadadezer, David took a large amount of bronze. The names are different in the 2 Samuel 8 passage. It's Betah and Bethrothai, but it's still the bronze that is taken. It may be a spelling issue. It may be that there was more than two cities that David was taking this bronze out of in Syria and in Tobah. But the 1 Chronicles 18, verse 8 passage goes on to say, with it, that is, with this bronze taken by David at this time, Solomon eventually made the bronze sea and the pillars and the vessels of bronze. So the writer of 1 Chronicles is living after the time of Solomon, so he knows that all of this precious metal collected by David on this push north ended up being put into storage by David and eventually was drawn out of that storage by David's son Solomon and turned into the bronze vessels in the temple, designed by David but built by Solomon. A nice tie-in for the history. In 1 Chronicles 18:9, we meet an ally of David, someone who voluntarily comes under David's kingship, even though he's not an Israeli. Verse 9 says, when the 2 Samuel 8, 9 passage spells his name as Toi, T-O-I. So again, proper nouns and numbers are some of the hardest things to copy perfectly from one manuscript to another. So it's nice when we kind of have more than one source to kind of help us understand that. But this guy is the king of Hamat. When he heard that David had defeated the whole army of Hadadezer, the king of Zobah, as well as, you know, the army of Damascus that came to assist him, this king of Hamat sent his son Hadoram, or the 2 Samuel passage, chapter 8, verse 10, spells his name as Joram, or J-O-R-A-M. So you can kind of see that's similar, but still a spelling variation. So this prince of Hamat comes to David to ask about his health and to bless him because he had defeated Hadadezer He'd fought against Hadadezer and defeated him. For Hadadezer had often been at war with Tou or Toi of Hamath. So David basically rescued the king of Hamath, who had been attacked repeatedly by the king of Zobah. In fact, this most recent event was the king of Zobah had pushed north of the kingdom of Hamath and was trying to take over everything all the way up to the bend in the Euphrates River. So now, not only does David have control of the kingdom of Zobah and the kingdom of Damascus, the kingdom of Hamath is voluntarily saying, we want to be part of the kingdom of Israel, we want to be part of the kingdom of David. And so we are told that he sent all sorts of articles of gold, of silver, and of bronze. So this is basically a thank you gift, and it's the first, we could call it tribute, but honestly, what it's actually going to be is the first tax revenue sent to David from Hamath, since Hamath is going to be part of the kingdom of Israel, and David is the king of that kingdom. So he sends all this precious metal. These also King David devoted to He Who Is, together with the silver and the gold that he'd carried off from all the nations, from Edom, which we'll get to the Edomite situation in just a moment, Moab, which we know that David had to fight against the Moabites and apparently carried out a reprisal campaign where he executes 2/3 of the Moabite military because of their actions. The Ammonites, whom we know have caused trouble on the eastern fringe of United Israeli territory, that is the Promised Land and the annexed territories on the east side of the Jordan Valley. So the Ammonites are also paying to King David. The Philistines, we already talked about them just recently and how they're paying into the revenue coffers of King David. And then the Amalekites. Now, the Amalekites had been severely beaten by King Saul at God's command, but not totally eradicated, even though that was what God had said was going to happen. And so apparently the Amalekites at this time in David's kingdom are sending in some sort of payments, some sort of tribute to keep David from completely wiping out their country. So just add that into the revenue stream. Now, kick back over to 2 Samuel chapter 8, verse 13. It says that David made a name for himself when he returned from striking down 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. So the Valley of Salt is a reference to the Dead Sea, particularly probably the South Bay area, which is what Edom touches on. Edom is to the southeast of the South Basin of the Dead Sea. In the First Chronicles parallel, we're told that it was actually Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, who killed these 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. So David's forces under command of Abishai, his nephew, went into Edom for some reason, probably a reprisal, because, again, the Israelis were told when they came past Edom that this was territory granted by God to the Edomite descendants of Esau, which is a relative of the Israelites. It's a brother tribe, if you will, because Jacob and Esau, Israel and Edom were brothers. So that territory God has already granted to the Edomites. But probably because the Edomites attacked Israel and Israel responded with Abishai going down there and killing 18,000 Edomites, they get to still live in their land, but they are now under Israeli oversight. And so we are told in the 2 Samuel 8:14 passage, then he put garrisons in Edom. Throughout all Edom, he put garrisons, and all the Edomites became David's servants. And David, he who has gave victory to David wherever he went. So by the time we get to the end of these parallel passages, David is now in control of the entirety of the promised land cited to Abraham. And then we have his administration described. David reigned over all Israel. David administered justice and equality, or equity, to all his people. That includes non-Israelis that are under him. Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was over the army. He got that position because he took Jerusalem intact. That was the promised reward for doing that. Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder, probably of military actions. Zadok, the son of Ahitub, and Ahimelech, the son of Abiathar, were priests. They're in partnership. Sariah was secretary, probably in civil affairs. And Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Kirathites and the Pelethites, and David's sons were priests.